You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hi, I'm your inner dream monologue, and you're fast asleep, so I'll be quick. Great job using the Colgate Optic White Overnight Teeth Whitening Pen before bed. When used as directed, it gives you a visibly whiter smile in just 7 days. So while I fly and talk to animals, you're removing teeth stains with ease. Sweet dreams. And when you wake up, keep on living life to the brightest. Colgate Optic White. Find it at all major retailers.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
Hi, and welcome to The Compass, the podcast documenting the struggles of life as an artist. I'm Leah Walsh. My guest today is Inez del Castillo. She is an actor, writer, and director who I was introduced to by my good friend Alejandro Rodriguez, who was on episode 1. She's so much fun and has an amazing positive energy. You can check out what she's up to at InezDelCastillo.com. And I hope you enjoy the 153rd episode of The Compass.
Can you define further dark side?
The follow-up question usually is, yeah. What does the dark side look like for you most often? Like, when I say that,
okay,
what do you picture? Because it's a little different for everybody, but I feel like everybody thinks of something when I say it.
Has one. Okay, so when you the first reaction that I had when you said dark side was Darth Vader, and you know, I feel like the dark side for me is feeling like futile. Like, I don't often think about quitting, but I do think that I think about, like, get hard on myself, like, I'm dumb. This is stupid. I have nothing to offer. What am I doing? I'm going to keep doing it because I'm too hard-headed to do otherwise, but, like, what is happening? And then, like, on a further note of getting, like, out of the flow. So when I'm, like, in a space of not doing things from my artist heart and doing things from, like, my ego place of, like, I'm going to get all this crap done because, like, competition or, like, I need to be famous and I need to make tons of money. And it doesn't feel nice to work from that space. So what do I do to not go there? First, sometimes I just go there. For a few days and like park it, you know? And I don't think that's to be underestimated. I've gotten nicer to myself about when I do go there. And I think it's really like the little things that help keep it from that. Like, recently I've started doing this thing where every time when I wake up, I just name 5 things that I'm grateful for in the morning. And it's crazy, but it's like, man, I have awesome sheets, or like, my bed is amazing. And not everybody has one of those, you know? And so, like, just that little, it's like tiny little things that keep it going, you know? I feel like you have a tiny little thing in your mind. Yeah.
I haven't stuck to it, like, as a daily thing. Mm-hmm. But it's very easy to take a fairly comfortable life for granted.
Oh, yeah. Especially in this country. Especially. Yeah. I think the past few years have really made a difference in my life because I've been doing a lot of spiritual work. So the five things is new, but as of a few years ago, I started doing like a guided visualization in the morning, one in the evening.
Is that kind of like a meditation?
Yeah, but meditation is like, I need to work on that more because I'm not so good at just sitting with myself. I like to have the training wheels of like a voice in my ears being like, now you're relaxing, or now see yourself accomplishing what you want to accomplish, or whatever it is. But it's somebody else telling, kind of walking you through it. So I call it training wheels, I guess. But that's great. And I journal when I can. That helps me a lot. I read a lot of fantasy and sci-fi. I'm telling you, it's like, it's so weird, but the more I'm like growing, I guess, the more I'm realizing it's like so the little things, you know, like getting outside in nature is
huge.
It's enormous. My nephews help so much. Yeah. It's just like those, it's just like having a life outside that like anything that reminds you, even walking over here, I looked up at the sky and I was like, oh my God, the moon looks amazing. And there's a planet. And I was like, oh, I got to ask my brother what planet is in the sky tonight. And I'm like, cool, I can see this from New York. You know, it's just like, yes, yeah.
Which is not something I used to do.
Yeah.
And I'm not enjoying, you know, being outside when it's dark briefly on that walk or whatever.
Yeah. I did that too. I used to always be on my phone from my walk from the train to my apartment, and I stopped. Unless it's like something, you know, in particular, but I've stopped. A few years ago, I also stopped when I jog. I don't have music on, and I just do like affirmations in my mind, you know? And I've started to, like, even just, like, having fun with it. Like, the other day, my husband and I, he's also an actor, and we were walking in the woods. And I just started going, like, Mr. Ojeda, now that you've won whatever award. And, like a freaking, like, five-year-old. Who cares? It was so much fun. We were, like, interviewing each other when we win awards and whatever. And it's, like, those little things that, like, connect you to everything around you are just like so helpful to remember that there's like a universe outside of like my own mental thing.
Well, that's what's so hard with this career is it's very easy since the thing you're using for your work is yourself, physically, emotionally, mentally. It's easy to focus in very small all the time on this business and on yourself.
Yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I think too our culture, you know, of like, I don't really do social media anymore because every time I went on Instagram or Facebook or something, it's again, like people are just putting up the very best, you know, and that gets really hard because I just think like, it's easy to forget that like everybody fights with their family or like, I don't know, has like physical insecurity, you know, like that's hard to remember when every picture is like, my butt is on point and my biceps are great and like, I don't know, look at this huge ring. I don't know, whatever it is, you know, so.
Okay, well, since we don't know each other that well yet, I kind of want to hear a little bit about like your background and where you've come from. I know you went to NYU for undergrad, right?
I did.
You grew up in New Jersey, kind of nearby.
Yeah. Oh, how do you know some? Oh, I grew up near Asbury Park.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, man, that's where I love to go walking. Yeah, I love Ocean Grove. I actually went walking on the boardwalk there the other day, and I was like, "This is amazing!"
It's like a beautiful, weird little place.
It really is. National Geographic wrote about it, by the way. Really? That's how weird it is. Yes, it's great. Side note, go Google Ocean Grove. If I'm not mistaken, yeah, it was Ocean Grove. So where am I from? I was born in Puerto Rico. My dad is half Dominican, half Puerto Rican. My mom is Dominican, raised in New Jersey. But my brother and I always say that we're like half generation because all my extended family is still in the Caribbean. And like we always spoke Spanish at home. And
did you spend a lot of time Disney?
We'd go every summer, and yeah, for a good stretch there, I'd go for like a month in the summers. So my mom wanted me to learn Spanish and all this stuff. But I think just like culturally, my parents came already as adults and as professionals, so we just were always very instilled with our like Caribbean culture. There wasn't, you know, it's not like in the 50s or even like until recently where people were like the Spanish was literally like slapped out of them or something like that. Like, we were always raised very proud of where we came from. And also both my grandparents on both sides were revolutionaries against the dictators. So like there was a lot of like cultural things with what my grandparents did to fight the dictator and all that. Right. Yeah. And so then I grew up in Jersey. I always have to say now that Jersey Shore show came out, like, not like the show, not that Jersey Shore, but I did grow up like outside, a little tomboy running around in the woods. And then I went to NYU, but I didn't really like find my place there. And
but you went for acting.
But I went for acting. My track was like NYU has studios the way like Hogwarts has houses, kind of thing. I never know how to like explain. And my studio is Playwrights Horizons, and they specifically worked on devised theater. So my I think on my diploma, maybe like the official thing is creating original work. That was my track.
Amazing. Would they put that on your diploma?
I don't know if it, don't quote me on that. I'd have to go check. I don't remember. Doesn't matter. And then since then I kind of didn't really know what I wanted to do. So I was just like doing theater jobs, and I had gone back home and
most of the time since school.
Yeah, and then I started working in the theater, and then I realized I wanted to focus on TV film, and so here I am now.
But you're also a writer, right?
True statement.
Can you tell me a little bit about that? Like, when did you start writing?
I think when I was a kid.
About actors who are also writers.
Really?
I wish that I were one of them.
Oh.
Maybe I will.
Oh, maybe you will. Well, this is you're a creator in your own right with the podcast. I've always written. I've always been a total book nerd, like complete and utter. That's also from my grandparents. Both my grandfathers were writers. Total nerd. And I always wrote like poetry and journaled and all that stuff. And then when I got to school, I started writing plays. And now I've written, like, I don't sing, but I've written a song. I wrote like a play with music, even though I again cannot sing for the life of me. I'm writing a book. Why? I don't know, but absolutely it's a sci-fi book. It is totally a sci-fi book. Yeah, that's actually one of the things that keeps me from the dark side. Is I always say, like, for some reason, when I write, like, things just start to flow. I can't explain it, but it's like I'll sit down to write one day. Because, by the way, I'm not like disciplined in any sort of way with my writing. It's just like an idea will come and I'll just write. And I have like three things in the air right now that I'm like, I don't know when I'm going to finish them.
Well,
but
it'll go like a month without touching it.
Oh, more. Yeah, like yeah. 6 months, and then I'll come back and write away, whatever. But whenever I do write, it's insane how, like, I'll just be writing and then I'll get, like, an email, like, oh, you booked whatever, or, like, come audition. It's bizarre. I don't know how to explain it.
Sometimes that happens when you put your focus on something else.
Yep. Yeah.
The universe.
I know. Why? Just do that thing. It's like everything is reverse psychology.
It really is.
But, yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That nobody has to give you permission to do.
Exactly.
When you're not in a play or when you're not booking something else. You know?
Exactly. And then, you know, my brain gets preoccupied with like, oh, what if this happened? And like, what if, oh my God. And then I don't know sometimes if it's just that time relatively starts to fly by, and maybe it's the same amount of time between booking something or whatever, but I just didn't feel it because my heart was someplace else. And so then when it happens, it's like a surprise, you know? Yes. Please ask away anything, Leah. Yes. I should say that thank God, and knock on all of the wood around here, that this year and the year past have been very good, and I've been piecing things together mostly with voiceover and booking other things. Yeah. But that's new. And that might also go away. So this has been kind of a journey for me, as I'm sure for everyone. But never underestimate that I'm so privileged to have my family nearby, and that helps a lot. Like, if I need to get out of town, I don't have to spend a lot of money. My mom constantly would buy me stuff from like BJ's, so now I have a Costco membership and all that. So like those things are like really, really helpful, you know. And just to have resources nearby if I need help or whatever, my brother and all that. I'm certified as a translator and interpreter and editor, again, with the nerdy book stuff. So that was kind of a nice stepping stone. I never really pursued it too much, but it gave me like some nice income.
Was it very involved to get certified?
Not very involved. It was actually more involved to get clients. Because it's still a freelance job. So I kind of realized quickly, this is cool, but it would take the energy that it would take to get the clients. I'd rather reserve that for the energy that it takes to just be in this business anyway. I've done babysitting. I've done like random gigs. I've done tutoring. And so for a while it was kind of that, and it wasn't making enough. So then I have to say, like, one of my first big jobs was working off Broadway at the Spanish Repertory. So that was a really great stepping stone, because that was always like, you know, you're not making bank, but you had like pretty regular performances that would bring in some money. So everything has been kind of like a mosaic economically since I've come to the city, where like there's always multiple pieces. And then as I've grown, they've kind of shifted and some go away and new ones come in. So that was for a while. And then I found catering, because I just was never cut out to be a waitress. And the few experiences I had were just, yeah, they were horrible. And like always laced with race stuff that was super awkward and weird and classed. It was just horrendous. So I made a pact to myself. I was like, you're going to make it work, but you're not going to be a waitress. To make it work, because I got to draw a line someplace. Yes. And for some people, for some people it works gloriously, not pas pour moi. So then I had catering, and catering really was the thing that I think, again, the situation could change, but in the past few years, that has helped me kind of get to a new place, because I didn't have to work during the day, so I could leave that for auditioning. And I think it's like the best money per hour that you can get for the amount of involvement that it requires.
Right.
Because I would just show up and like, yes, we'll treat you crappy, but like, there's nothing.
You don't have to get emotionally involved.
No, there's no like skin in. I would get callbacks or like an audition, be like, I can't come in today. And they would maybe get pissy, but you're just a body. There's like 20 other people to replace you.
That's such a big goal.
Yeah. Whereas with waitressing for me, it was way more stressful, because I'm like, if I miss that shift, like I'm going to screw somebody over.
Right.
Catering? No, dude, it doesn't freaking matter. Like nobody cares that you were not there, you know? So that was great. That really... generally, yeah, it had seasons. So what I started to do, the thing that like came in with all of that is that I love organization. And so as I've grown, I've also organized my finances better. And so I started to learn, like after the first year, I was like, oh crap, catering has definite seasons. So I need to make sure that in these amount of months, I make enough money to support me through these amount of months. You know, and so planning for that really helped. And then if I had something like, I got like a sweet gig or something, you know, like a one-off, like, oh shoot, I'm about to make a couple $1,000s, you know, whatever, I would put that into savings because I would know, like, this is my rainy day fund. This is not to be spent right now. This is like the universe telling me, here, my daughter, you know, like, good work. And that way I had it so that if I didn't get those shifts that I needed, I wasn't freaking out. And so then from there, I booked like a few voiceover things that really helped. And then people start calling me back. And that has been what kind of has brought me to a new horizon.
Tell me about the voiceover stuff.
Yeah.
I know for a lot of people I've talked to, mm-hmm. voiceovers are like weirdly hard to get into.
Yes, I don't have a good answer for this because I stumbled ass backwards. Can I curse on here? I'm sorry. Okay. Into voiceover. I have to be very honest. Also the fact that I speak Spanish makes a lot of that much easier. I say much easier. I mean, it gives me more options because, you know, the Spanish speaking required a lot of bullying growing up and a lot of hard work back then. So now it's paying off now. So it's not that like, it's like, oh, I'm walking in the park, I talk Spanish, you know. So, but it does make a difference because there's a high demand for Spanish and not as many people to fill it. Also, to be completely honest, I'm very fluent in Spanish, and a lot of people that speak Spanish at home are not that fluent. They're like conversational. And so there's a difference with that because I can narrate full books in Spanish, whereas some people might not be able to actually pull off, you know, 8 hours of narration and without an accent coming through. Yeah. And if you're selling it to a Hispanic audience, they're going to pick up on that, you know? So, the voiceover, basically I got the meeting because I'm a Spanish speaker. And when I showed up, my agent was like, oh, you speak English. I was like, yeah, I do a little bit, you know? So that started. And again, like this has been years of relationship building because, you know, I have a raspy voice and it's deeper for a woman, but I still kind of sound like a 13-year-old boy. And like, so for a while I was kind of like, he also like didn't know where to put me vocally because like, you don't want me for like, I don't freaking know, like Pantene. I don't know. You know, like there's like a certain thing that you want me for. And so it took a little bit to kind of calibrate, like just to get to know each other, really. And then, like I said, I booked.
Is this separate from your commercial agent or is it all the
same? They're separate agents, but they're in the same agency. But I don't really book commercial that much. That's like one of my giant insecurities. I'm like, nobody wants me for commercials. So I booked an ADR gig. An ADR, for anybody who like doesn't know or isn't into voiceover, is there's two types of ADR. So when you film something and one of your lines got messed up, they're going to call you back in to do your line. And forgive me if you already know this, but also for TV shows and movies, anybody who was like an extra or whatever, you know, if they didn't have a mic on production or during production, then they're going to want you to go back in and create like an ambient thing, you know? So like if we're in the movie, they might want a couple of voices from the street to come through to make it really real that we're in New York or whatever. And so I booked a gig like that. And that was a huge learning curve. But that was one of the things that there's like certain bookings throughout my career that have like brought me, you know, like to that led to other stuff. And so that was one of the bookings that those people, I work with them consistently, not predictably, but consistently. And that's been a huge boon to my career.
It's just nice to have some sort of extra or steady income that's, mm-hmm.
Right.
Skills.
Yeah. And you're with other actors.
Instead of walking dogs or something.
Exactly. You're with other actors. It's a SAG job, you're getting pension and health. Like, these things are enormous once you're trying to, like, really make your life doing that, you know? So that was one thing. And then from there, it's kind of grown because I was like, shoot, man, like, I'm getting voiceover stuff. I better be freaking grateful. Like, I gotta put money towards this. And so that was the other thing, is budgeting has been a huge thing where everybody has a different financial situation, you know, like what you start off with. And I started off with a very privileged situation from the get-go. And that's, you know, you can't take that factor out of it. Right. And so from there, I calculated how many hours of catering I needed to work a week. And I would stop myself at that, because I realized that it got very easy to get comfortable. Same thing when I worked at the Spanish Repertory. It was like people would get comfortable because it's so nice to know that you're going to have a check coming in, and our industry is not like that. And it's like the human thing that you want some sort of consistency, but I would see people getting trapped and I was like, I cannot allow that. So I'm going to work exactly as many hours as I need to work. And once I hit that many hours, I'm not working past that unless there's like something specific that I'm saving up towards. And the rest of that time is going towards seeking out new jobs in, you know, under SAG contracts. Because at least if I'm not in front of the camera, you know, at least it's going to be paying me pension and health and so good money.
What are some of the ways that you go after that stuff yourself, besides the ones that your agents just send you out of the
way? Yeah. I send postcards to people. I email, like, now that there's a few people that I work with consistently, I will email them or send them a postcard every so often. Actual clients. Also casting directors. I'll even email my agent sometimes and be like, I told them at the beginning of this year, I was like, what are other ADR people in the city? Let me talk to them. And I've emailed them and sent them my resume. Nobody's called me in yet, but at least they responded and said, you know, we'll keep you in mind. Taking classes. I've taken a lot of voiceover class, or not a lot. I want to take more voiceover, but I've been taking voiceover classes. I have an audiobook coach because audiobooks are, this is one of those things that you'll hear, it's very hard to get in, but it's actually one of the areas of voiceover that has the most opportunity. And I got an opportunity to do an audiobook and I was like, oh, okay. So one publisher already knows me. They already hired me. So now let me like get my ish together and make a reel and like just start emailing people. And I made a reel in Spanish. I made one in English. You start emailing people. And then now people are calling me to do audiobooks. Thank you. It is. Yeah, it's awesome. But because I went and I was like, you can't just sit on your laurels. Like the first audiobook was a total mistake. Like I was like, how the hell did they give this to me? And I hear it back and I'm like, oh my gosh, this sounds awful. But then that now that I have the in and they know who I am, then I was like, well, let me work with the audiobook coach. And then I was like, hey, I have this new demo. And then lo and behold, they call me back in because they're like, oh, this girl's like better now. She's not crap anymore, you know? And now they call me in. So it's just like little things like that, putting together, like constantly shifting the pieces and putting them together, you know.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com.
So what does your family make of you choosing to be an artist for your career? I know you said you had some writers in the family.
Yeah, but they were also like, well, one was a lawyer, one was a doctor. Like, they were real professionals. I don't know that they know what to make of it. They're very supportive. My husband's an actor too, so he and I are really like, we're a team.
Yeah.
Thank God. And my brother's a psychologist, so I feel like we're a good tag team. Like, we're on two sides of the same coin almost, yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah, it's funny. He'll come see my shows or like listen to something that I've done and he'll like psychoanalyze it. He's like, I think this character, whatever, whatever. And so that's really cool. He's one of the most supportive people in my career. Yeah. And I'm lucky that my best friend from home is also an artist. So that kind of nucleus is awesome. Extended family, no one really gets it, but I don't. I just have taken up a policy of like, you don't really need to know then. Like, I don't know. Sometimes I wonder, I've heard it's like better to like teach the people around you about like the ups and downs of an acting career. But I'm like, there's no way that my parents understand. I used to tell them when I had auditions and it was like nerve wracking because they think of it the way you go to a job interview. And they're like, well, did you get it? And I'm like, yeah, I'm like, you would know. Yes. And in this industry, if you're booking like 1 in 20, that's great stats. That's not a stat that you normally hear in most other industries. Or maybe it is. I could be wrong. But I don't think by and large.
The other people are not going on this many interviews.
Yeah, yeah. I'm like, I think, exactly. I'm like, I think maybe like it might be a good stat for like finding that one job that you're going to stick with for 30 years. But like, we're talking about 1 in 20, you know, keep them coming, you know.
Right.
Anybody else is like, yeah, if I do 1 in 20 and then I, you know, stay there for the rest of my career, you know, that doesn't exist. So they don't get it, you know.
Do they come and see your stuff?
They do. That's why I'm like, they are supportive even though they don't get what's going on. And the rest of my family, they're in the Caribbean and they're like crazy American cousin who gets to do whatever she wants because she lives in America or United States, you know, we're all American, but you know, that's not even like a thing. So I have people close to me, like one of my cousins, like, again, everybody's very supportive. Nobody's like, ew, why would you do that? But most of them, I don't really talk to them about what that entails. I think generally they respect, they're like, oh, I can see that you work hard. They're not like questioning. Yeah, which is nice. Like, I hope they don't think of me as like a lazy bum because I don't have like regular working hours, you know? I know my parents like know that I work hard. So that's nice.
We don't have to talk about this if you don't want to.
Yeah. Oh, with my art. I was going to tell you, reading many fantasy novels. I have like ceased to read things that enrich my brain.
It's like escapism.
Yeah. It's yeah. Like, is there a dragon in it? Yes. I'm going to read it. Art. I think I got into this because I want to create connection between people. And even though sometimes TV and film seems like a roundabout way of doing that, because in theater it's like more of an immediate, you know, you feel the audience there with you. I think ultimately TV and film, the reason they're so successful is because they do create connection. And so to me, like, the current political climate is exactly why I insist on being an artist. Because to be honest, like, I work my butt off. And if I wanted to make six figures, I could just go get a job that made six figures. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's actually not that hard. I'm like, there are plenty of, you guys would just freaking go on like, what's that thing? Idealist or whatever. Like, you know, and just go get a job that made a crap ton of money. Like, that's not that hard. So being in this, I think my writing has a lot to do with what I want to say about that of, you know, it comes out like my Patronus comes out. It's like inevitably it social things get talked about. Inevitably women's rights gets talked about when I'm writing. And that feels really good. I'm also lucky that, like, for example, I just narrated an audiobook that, I don't know if I'm like allowed to say the name, but it was like, it's a nonfiction and it's all about, people at the border migrating. And so like getting to do stuff like that is so touching to me. I was like crying. I'm like reading the freaking book itself. I'm like freaking out. Yeah. I mean, there are those too, you know, but it's nice to know that like the crappy romance novels are what help like pay the bills maybe, but like I also get to do this in the mix, and that means a lot to me. It means a lot. It's like real people's stories, you know, and that's huge, you know. And I think also this might sound a little like vague, but I think like especially recently I've been working on a lot of like melding my spirituality with my art, and just realizing like if my purpose is to create connection between humans and to let all humans know that they're worthy and they have value no matter who you are or where you are. And even if you're like, I believe that in everything having value, you know, like the rocks and mosquitoes, because they're going extinct, guys, you know, like, and they're important for ecosystems. And I believe in all that. And so I've been trying to kind of meld that in my own like personal practice. Not that other people are going to see that, but I think like for my own spiritual growth, and now more than ever with the political climate, it's become important to me to be like, look, I gotta, in auditions, find a way to connect with human beings, because that's what I want to do in my art. And if I can't do it in my life and just like lift my head up on the train and look at someone, or like the other day, it's like stupid little things once again, but like the other day I was standing on the platform and I could see the conductor of the train, and I just like waved at him and smiled, and he was so surprised. He was like, you know, cause we don't do that anymore. It's so, we're so weird now. So just doing little things like that, or like walking into an audition room and when they say like, how are you, being like, I'm freaking great, dude. You called me in. Like, what? I'm awesome. You know what I mean? Like, and not just being, oh, I'm fine. You know, it's like little things like that, pushing myself to just be present and gracious, because especially in this political climate, reading some of these stories, especially like fresh in my mind, like the comfort that we have is ridiculous. And people die to try to get into this country, you know, even with all its faults. So how dare I, like, I mean, I'm still gonna binge Netflix now and then, but you know, like I try to, like, I've been trying to like really bring that presence and hold myself accountable, because my other thought is like, isn't that the point anyway? The point is to like make the world better. And if I'm only like gonna make it better from like, you know, call time till they let me off set, like that doesn't make any sense, you know? So I guess what I'm trying to say in an extremely long-winded fashion is that the current political climate has been kind of like a call to action to myself, to my own spirituality, to just really like be a freaking human being, you know?
I love that. And it's so easy to want
Thank
to
you.
Out.
Yeah. I mean, and I do. Yeah.
Oh my God. I love that. Tangent, just because you mentioned auditions.
Yeah.
Is there anything that you feel like you've really learned or really changed about the way you approach auditions since getting out of school?
Oh, shoot.
Besides just trying to be more human.
Yeah. Which, you know, I don't always succeed at. I have been taking on camera classes that have really changed how I even just analyze a text. And I feel like half the journey is unlearning all the things that I learned and just going back to like being a free spirit, you know, when I had like no recognition and just was myself, and somehow that was good enough and got me far enough.
That's the fine line about training.
I know. And that's kind of
that spark that got us in the first place.
Yeah, and truth be told, that spark is, I think, more than we're ever told. Like, that's that thing that I want all beings to know that they're valuable,
right?
Is that freaking spark. That's the thing. Like, no one cares, really. I mean, I'm exaggerating. But yeah, training is a fine thing. And for what we do. I'm not putting down training for doctors or like rocket scientists. And so that, and also playing the long game, I've gotten more patient. I've gotten more like, I'm just more present to the fact that when I go in for an audition, I'm going, or when I submit an audition or whatever it is, I'm representing myself as an artist. And, you know, this comes and goes. Like, there are good days and bad days. But when I'm in the flow and on my best days, it's like, what do I like about this? What do I want to say about this? You know? And again, I think I used to do that before training, just because that was the human that I was. And I think like most children are, you know? And then training happened. but yeah, that, and this is a recent thing for me, but I have a lot of resentment towards like being a woman in this industry.
I understand that.
Yeah. And I've been saying like I've been getting my groove back, because I think for a while I was just like, I need to be dressed practically, like, screw this. If I can't do my makeup in 10 minutes, like, no, you know, I'm like, I'm not paying for this crap. Like, my hair is going
to
be whatever the hell it is.
Yeah.
And the truth of the matter is, like, recently I was going to get new headshots, and I said to my agent, like, I need a new agent. I'm like, what, you know, what do you need? And he's like, look, you need a sexy shot. Like, it can be whatever is sexy for you, but I just need a shot that's like sexy Inez. And I had to give him credit. I'm like, he is unfortunately correct, you know? And I've had, I just have a lot of resentment towards that. And I've had to come back to like going back to my 15-year-old self, where I'd like spend an hour, you know, curling my hair and like testing out new makeup and whatever, like, I've just gone through waves with that. I went through like 5 years. I wouldn't put on nail polish, you know, just cause it's like so much easier not to, you know? And then one day my husband was like, I've never seen you with nail polish. And we've been together for 8 years. And he was like, I'm just curious. You don't have to, like, I just want to know, like, why don't you? And I was like, chemicals, screw that. Like, whatever, you know? Yeah. I'm like, what the frick? I wasn't born that way. And then I myself got curious. I was like, oh yeah, I wonder what that's like. And then I painted my nails one day and I was like, oh, this was so relaxing. You know, I was like, oh my God, there's also like, so I've been kind of like taking ownership again of some of those things. And also just like being aware, like I still chose to be an actor. Like I could go be a scientist and like, you know, research whales or something. I don't know that if you're diving, you need to have makeup on, you know? So like, I have to take responsibility and be accountable for like, I said I freaking wanted to be on screen. Like, what the hell did I think was going to happen? You know, so I don't even remember what
it's
the original...
Fine line. I mean, we're talking about auditions, but...
Yeah.
It is a fine line between, like, presenting yourself in some sort of way that makes you feel like yourself.
Yes.
And playing the game enough.
You know? Yeah.
That is weird. Right.
And it's weird, because then I had this weird shame, because I did my hair for an audition the other day, and I was like... Look at there's no frizz here. Look at this. And I was like, oh my God, this is amazing.
Yeah, I shouldn't be enjoying this.
I know. I have very frizzy hair, by the way. So that was like a freaking success. And yeah, I was like, oh man, you're like part of the machine, man. You enjoyed, you know. And it's that fine line of like you said, same thing with like, you know, I think it comes up too with like physical attraction and all that, you know, like. When you're networking and like obviously someone came up and talked to you because they think you're good looking or something or whatever it is, you know, and it's like that fine line of how much do you play. And so anyway, I've been trying to kind of embrace all of that when I go to auditions, and I've been doing my prep differently because of this class that I've been in, which requires letting go, and I'm a control freak. So that is extremely uncomfortable. But I just had my first audition in a long time where I like really got to test this out. And I mean, it didn't go as expected. So I think that was the point.
So what's the difference in the way you prep?
that I really just prep understanding what the story is, and I don't really rehearse. Like, I used to, like, sit down by myself and, like, do some lines and, like, okay, what does this mean, whatever. And for a while I got into, like, oh, well, it's camera, so I have to, like, change the picture. So let me rehearse how I'm going to change the picture. Like, maybe I'll, you know, touch my nose here. Maybe I'll run my hand through my hair here, whatever. And that still pops up in my brain, but this new technique that I'm trying has been about just kind of trusting that that'll happen organically when, yeah, when you get what's going on between the two people. You know, so like just now, you know, like I'm doing a hand gesture right now, but it's natural. So it, my prep has been less about controlling the moment of what the image is going to look like and more about like just digging as much as possible. You know, what are these people saying to each other? What's going on here? Is like, okay, did this just happen? Is that good? Is that bad? Is it everything all at the same time? You know, and just really understanding the story inside and out. And of course I still like fumble, like, I don't know, the reader was on the other side of the camera and I like lost my shit, but, but so it's a work in progress, but that's changed. I've never prepped like that before. Cool. Yeah.
Yeah. I haven't done a ton of on camera stuff. So I'm always curious how people prepare for that.
Yeah.
Again, we don't have to talk about this if you don't want to, mm-hmm. but since you and your husband are both artists, mm-hmm. who's in the same field as you.
Differently.
Some of the same issues.
Yeah. Differently each day. Well, everything's got its pros and its cons. I don't, is your husband, your husband's an artist, yeah. So then I want to hear how you guys do it. But yeah, sometimes it's great because we'll help each other do auditions, you know, and that's amazing. He's better than me at knowing that there's a life outside of acting and trusting the process. So really, like, I think part of the reason why I fell in love with him is that he helps me be just more spontaneous and present. And I think we're both really on the same page that, like, being good or our best versions is the most important thing. So I don't know. I don't know how it would be to be with not an artist.
Yeah.
How about you? What do you guys do?
I mean, we try to focus on the fact that we're a team.
Yeah.
Anything that's good for one of us is good for both of us.
That's a big thing.
And we always joke that he's my best agent. He has an agency called Cuddle Works. And Cuddles work.
Cuddles freaking work.
I mean, like, he's always, mostly just because he loves me so much, but he's always talking about me to other people.
Mm. That's awesome. I really...
Like I said, it's nice that we understand exactly what the other person is going through.
Yeah.
And then, at the same time, the frustration is that, like, we have the same frustrations. And when we're both frustrated at the same time, it's tough.
Yeah.
That's the other thing. Our rule is that it's like, only one of us... If one of us is going to the dark side, only one of us is allowed to go to the dark side. The other one needs to be holding down the fort.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. And now you guys have the baby. So
we have the baby, yeah.
What's
so we really gotta hold it together.
Yeah, what's different with that? Like, how do you...
I mean, she's just incredible. She's brought us, like, so much joy. It's just, I think it's just more pressure on, like, the practical of wanting to have the safety net. That it just makes it harder to not always know where the paycheck's coming from.
Yeah. Nice, okay.
He's been at the Denver Center doing a show.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's been, it's been like 2 months of solo parenting. That's been tough.
Wow.
It's tough for him to be away. We went to visit a couple of weeks ago, but he had to go like 5 weeks without seeing her.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, there's...
We would not do that again anytime soon unless it was for something really good.
Yeah. Yeah, it's hard. I'm taking notes because we've been talking about, you know, how do we start a family? How does that work? And so kudos to you guys. That's amazing. And I think, yeah, I mean, we are always talking about like the businesses that we want to start outside of acting. So yeah, we haven't done any of them yet, but we want to, and I love that he's very like in tune with, he's like, yeah, we'll have other things on the side that don't depend on acting to get us money eventually, you know? And I really respect, you know, that he has this, all this knowledge. Like we always talk about, just like dream, like we're just dreamers. I don't know. I don't know that we would even survive if we like tried to get a 9-to-5, like we just don't, we just are always dreaming together. And that just like helps us immensely, I think. Yeah.
I want to ask you something about casting and like typecasting as someone who goes back and forth between languages, goes back and forth between cultures, if there's any challenges you run into with that.
Absolutely, yeah.
That
typing or branding or whatever has been something I've worked on a lot that ultimately I think gave me a lot more confidence when I, not so much in the audition room, but more like in conversation when I'm like networking and stuff, it's made me much more just like concise about where I fit into the industry and how that could work or whatever it is. So
like taking control of yeah. You talk about it as opposed to like other people putting you into boxes.
Yeah. So it should be said that I'm very light skinned and most people think I'm like Arabic or Italian or I've gotten everything except for where I'm actually from. I'm not even kidding. No one's ever guessed Dominican Puerto Rican because I'm so light skinned and people here think like Dominicans are only dark skinned. And really people will come up to me and be like, Assalamu alaikum or like whatever. Like I get everything like Greek, Jewish, everything. And so that's interesting because there's, I think every casting has its issues, you know, or like it's, yeah, like it's the part where you're boxed in, you know? So, you know, my name is Inez del Castillo and I was told like, man, that's good. You shouldn't have, so when I went to go become SAG, my first last name is Garcia, but there was another Inez Garcia. Damn her. And so they didn't let me do Inez Garcia. And they were like, you need a new name. And I was like, ah. And I just went with my second last name because I have both last names. And I was like, all right, Inez del Castillo. And a few people were like, man, you should have picked something more like gringo. And I was like, I didn't have time to think. Like, that's my actual name. That's part of my name. And, you know, even that, like, people have been like, have you thought about changing your name? And I'm like, no. No, I refuse. Like, no, this is my name. I just don't know how else. I don't think I would respond to another, like, I don't know. So, again, my hard-headedness came in. I'm like, no, 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 no. There's, like, certain boundaries that I cannot cross. And one of them is, like, making myself, like, Jenny Diaz because that might be more appealing to a non-Spanish speaker. No, nothing wrong with anybody named Jenny Diaz, but just that's not my name, you know? And so that was like the first thing, you know? And so I come across this a lot because it's like, again, I'm very fluent and not everybody in the Spanish speaking community is. And that's kind of misunderstood because especially when you're doing casting in Spanish, most of the time people casting are still the normal people that would cast. So they don't speak Spanish. They have no idea. Like I was at a callback the other day and this guy who was white and just happened to be like pretty fluent in Spanish, but not totally fluent before the callback. And they asked for just completely fluent people, which already was like, dude, really? But before we went in, he's like, oh, by the way, I don't, like, I might not be able to follow you because they're going to ask us to improv. And, like, I speak. Yeah. And he's like, I speak, but I'm not, like, totally fluent. And I'm like, you mofo, like, why'd you? It says it in the freaking breakdown. But that happens a lot. But that happens a lot. Not that I'm dependent on the other person, but that people that don't actually, aren't actually fluent kind of make it in. That's fair. That's fair. But on the same token, it's like, know your limitations. Yeah, know your limitations because now you're screwing me and you could have just been honest, you know? And so, anyway, so we go in and the director guy is like, can you do this in a Spanish accent? And I'm like, no one would, like, that's awful. Yeah, with a Spanish accent from Spain. And to us, that's like saying, like, say you just went into like a casual commercial callback and they randomly were like, hey, could you do an Irish accent? And you'd be like, no, like, why? You didn't say this before. So, I mean, I'm sure that's happened before in English speaking auditions. But the point just being that that's like one factor is that, like, a lot of people don't expect me to speak Spanish because I am light-skinned. A lot of things that I see on TV that fit with, like, what people think Latinos look like, those people are speaking with an accent, and it's very frustrating to, like, native speakers. Or, again, like, they might be a native speaker, but they might just not be fully fluent. They might have spoken at home but not be, like, at a working level. And so that's like a weird taboo in our community, because it's like, it's frustrating because there's so many Latino actors who even have an accent in English. So why don't you just give it to one of them who speak more Spanish than English? You know, then again, because I'm light skinned, I don't really fit in necessarily with what people are imagining as Latino. But then, you know, I would feel weird taking a Middle Eastern role or like something else that somebody, like, maybe not so much with something European, because there would be less like socio geopolitical things wrapped up in it, because like Europe is a superpower. So it gets more complicated, obviously, with like countries that are not on the top.
When you're in the room, have there ever been situations where you needed to advocate for yourself and some of the choices?
Mm-hmm. I don't know that that's happened, but actually the opposite, that I've, for better or for worse, like I do feel shame around this, but I feel like I've like been party to like racism in different ways and just have like shut my mouth and focused on getting the work done. Or like I've been questioned on that same thing. Like I had somebody be like, well, you don't look Latina, you look white. So like, what am I supposed to do with you? And stuff like that. And I'm like, obviously if you said that to me, like on the street, I'd be like, I don't need to deal with you again. But yeah, exactly. And so like, again, like for better or for worse, because on the one hand I'm like, well, you do want to get ahead. But on the other hand, I'm like, yeah, but that's what you could say with like, people turning their head the other way with like sexual stuff, you know? So like, yeah. I feel kind of shameful about that sometimes. And I hope with time, like I can forgive myself, I guess, cause I can't change it at this point. But, that's happened. I've had friends that have advocated for themselves being like, I'm not going to do this with a like stereotypical dialect. Things like that. I generally like, I try to be as authentic as I can. Like I'll come in and just talk like this, you know, and if somebody wants to be like, cause again, like this is the other thing, is that they'll be like, oh, you talk white, or, oh, can they be more Hispanic? I'm like, well, what do you mean, dude? Like Hispanic from where, man? And they don't freaking know. But I'm like, are you talking like Bronx? Are you talking like my mom? Like, cause I had one manager, I didn't end up signing with them, but they were, I was doing in my reel, like my mom's accent. And my mom is like she talks like, I always say she's like Sofia Vergara before Sofia Vergara, you know? My mom's a total badass, but she has a very thick accent. And you know, I grew up with that accent and I was like super offended, cause this guy was like, oh, well that's not a very good accent, is it? I was like, yo, don't tell me that I don't know how to do my mom's accent, you know? And then when I walked away, I was like, oh, I hope you didn't think that I thought that that was like a Bronx accent. But that's the thing, is like, there's not like clear ways of talking about it. Yeah. I'm like, no, like, so people aren't clear about like, oh, this is a recent immigrant, or like, this is a second or third generation. Like they don't know what that means, you know? So like, I've advocated a bit in that sense where I'll like ask them to clarify, you know? And yeah.
Yeah.
But it's still overwhelmingly white. And I've also advocated, like, I've had more than one person tell me, like, oh, we don't know where to put you and your name's super ethnic, but your look isn't and all this. But then I'm in that camp that's like, you know, you're too white for the people of color, but you're too dark for the white people. Like, that's been my whole life, you know. It's like, you're not white, you're definitely not in our group, but you're also like not really what we expect of a person of color. And so I've also had that where, like, I've told people, like, look, submit me for the white roles too. Because, of course, like, unfortunately, for whatever it may be, like, politically, it's like when I book a white role or, like, you know, a role that was labeled as white, it's like I'm sticking it to the man. It doesn't work the other way around. If a white person books a role that was supposed to be for a person of color, you just disenfranchise someone, you know? And so that's another thing that I've advocated for. Yeah.
So are there any tangible things that you reach for again and again if you do feel yourself going to the dark side? Like books, music, or something like that?
Yeah. I exercise. I love exercise. I really like exercising. So I'll do that. Walking outside in the parks, I like, or going down to my parents and going hiking. Mm-hmm. Everybody calls it like Inez's woods, like, you know, there's like my woods, you know. Yeah, just getting out, looking at the stars at night. Honestly, like the other night it was like me and my brother and a beer and the telescope. And I was like, freaking amazing. You know, like, it's just like, it's the simplest things, y'all. Going back to again and again is journaling. Or, like, I'm a big believer in affirmations and the law of attraction. So, like, writing out what it is. But something I tell myself a lot is, like, everything always works out for me. Like, it's fine. This is a bad moment, but everything always works out, you know? The other one I love is, like, I don't have to be perfect. I just have to be good enough, you know? I am the exception to every rule in this industry. It's just, like, I just tell my, and thank God I've been doing it enough now that, like, I start to go there and my brain will just, like, fire off. Like, everything always works out for me. I'm like Pavlovian, where now where I go running, because I don't do music anymore, I do affirmations. First thing that comes into my head is, I am pure positive energy. And literally, like, I'll walk out with my shoes on and my brain is already like firing off. And I don't have like media that I go back to. I mean, there's music that I listen to, but I've kind of lost the habit of like just listening to music. I should do that more. There's not like one thing I do, but I'll just like find a show or a book that just like takes me away.
Right, something that actually like sucks you in.
Yeah, there's
nothing better than a book that does that.
You know, like books are literally make my life just happier. I'm not like, and I'll just like search around. I'll be like, okay. I constantly have books on hold at the library. It's just like a thing. I'm like, for my own mental health, I constantly need, like, I thrive when I have like three or four books like in queue, you know, and like more on my bookshelf. So I know, like, and if a book's not doing it for me, I don't like to read more than one book at a time, but if it's not doing it for me, I will. Yeah. I'll get through it in the end, but I'll like find one that'll touch my heart in the moment.
And the final question is there anything you want to recommend of any art form that you've seen recently?
Oh. Oh my. Man, this is embarrassing.
any art form. It could be a TV show, it could be anything.
Oh, okay. I love the book. Okay. I love The Dragon Prince. It's on Netflix. It's freaking amazing. I just started watching Avatar: The Last Airbender. If you see a theme, it's there. I love cartoons. Everybody swears by Avatar. I'm just starting out, so I don't know yet. And book-wise, I'm reading this series. The first one's called The Invisible Library, and that has been my drug of choice recently. Okay. That's like super fun. Oh, it's amazing. I think I'm on book like 5 now. And you know what? I should say, I didn't even like the first book that much because I felt very like stilted and it was like a lot of exposition, I feel like. But it's worth it because she's setting up everything, and then it's just like witty fun and banter. It's great. Yeah, I'm sad I don't have a play to recommend. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Compass Podcast. If you find these conversations valuable to your life as an artist and would like to support the ongoing production of The Compass, please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/thecompasspodcast. Pledges start at as little as $1 a month. Anything you can give will be greatly appreciated. Also, if you have a moment, please rate or review in iTunes. Every little bit helps other listeners to find the podcast. I'd like to thank the following people for their generosity. The Compass cover art is by Kim Miller, music by Brendan Spieth, audio assistance from Nick Choksi, and a special thanks to Frankie J. Alvarez. See you next time.
The Outsiders, S.E. Hinton's generation-defining novel, is now a powerful and moving Broadway hit that the New York Post is calling the best new musical of the season so far. Don't miss your chance to join Ponyboy and the Greasers and experience the classic story come to life in a whole new way. The New York Times calls it refreshing, gritty, and endlessly effective. So get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com, and of course, stay gold. They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.